go, Muniz. He's done it again. Oh, what a lovely goal. And I'm delighted for Sasha Lukic. It's his first goal for the club, and he'll love that. The Hammersmith Enders are on their feet. It's Muniz again. Oliver, 3-0 ahead.
Hello, and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under, which actually is probably two-thirds very, very local today rather than Down Under, but that's a minor detail. We're here to talk about many things, particularly the forthcoming game against West Ham tomorrow, Sunday. We're recording on Saturday as a bit of an experiment, hoping and expecting that your Fulham day is a little empty, seeing as we have no game on Saturday. You've probably got a long list of DIY and menial jobs provided by your partners that is no doubt going to take up your afternoon, but we hope we can fill some of that time maybe with a set of headphones in while you earn some brownie points. Here this afternoon we've got a couple of well-known faces and names. We've got Skibby. How are you, Skibby?
I'm very well, thank you. And yeah, well known. I don't know who you've been speaking to, but
over Twitter, mate. You're a sensation in your own lunchtime, causing a lot of trouble, actually.
Causing a lot of trouble. Mugging off Chelsea, and apparently it's a tune that everyone can sing along to. But no, happy afternoon, happy evening, and yeah, looking forward to sort of not be disappointed on a Saturday for the first time in a long time. So that's a refreshing feeling. But yeah, happy to discuss things. All Fulham, really.
Very good. And David Crave. Dave, how are you?
Yeah, very well, very well. As you say, I had plenty of errands to run today. I took a break from the gardening, actually, to jump in and talk a bit of Fulham. First, it's actually been decent weather for the first time this year, really, in England at the moment. So perfect opportunity to go outside. And as Skibby says, it's nice not to have to worry about the Fulham game until tomorrow. Looking forward to just, getting into it. Lots happened this week, isn't there?
Well, certainly has. And you're very welcome, Dave, happy to give you a little break. I hope you told your wife that it's a four-hour session we're doing today.
And beers are compulsory.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah. As you mentioned, there's it's actually in the world of West Ham and Fulham, it's actually been a huge week. Really a lot of things going on. And we predicted that earlier in the week and thought that with West Ham's trip to Germany a couple of days ago, we thought it could be eventful and, worth delaying the conversation until they'd got back and we'd maybe had a better sight of what we're going to be up for tomorrow. But on top of that, obviously, a number of things have happened during the week, some pretty exciting news, which I no doubt everyone's around, with Muniz getting an incredible accolade. And on top of that, we've had the Fulham women play at Craven Cottage. And I'll just pull up a slide here for anyone following on the live stream just to talk about that, just in case anyone missed that game last Sunday. I guess you could call it a rare treat for the women to be offered the opportunity to play at Craven Cottage. And it's always a great occasion. I'm not sure of exactly what the attendance was, but I do believe the Johnny Haynes had a good couple of thousand in there, it's just a great atmosphere and really great for the women to play in front of a decent crowd. Not that Motspur Park is exactly empty, but it's an entirely different experience to be playing at a Premier League ground on a wonderful surface and obviously using all of the facilities on match day as well. So, an incredible result against Dartford, who are having a very, very good season and are likely to be contenders for the silverware. And I would say, I don't think it's being unreasonable to say that Fulham probably overachieved in really brushing Dartford aside with a 4-0 victory, a couple of goals actually created on by the Fulham women, and a couple of own goals. But really, they did incredibly well. Very, very played some really beautiful football, and they're a pleasure to watch. And certainly, we at That's So Craven are very, very happy and proud to keep supporting the girls and giving them a platform. Skibby, I know you had half an eye on the game, following along on YouTube, and again, thank you to Fulham Football Club for actually providing that stream. It's such a pleasure to be able to watch it. I mean, normally we're kind of following through written articles and, you know, the odd snippet here and there 3 or 4 days later. It makes it pretty difficult. So we appreciate that. Obviously, there's, you know, it's quite a lot of infrastructure and some editing and pre and post production that's got to be involved to make that happen. But Skibby, what did you think? I'm not sure how many times you've watched the women over the last months.
What were your thoughts? That was the first time I'd watched them for, I think, 90 minutes, I think. And it was really good to see, I think, because I didn't know really what to expect, because weirdly enough, sort of the last women's team that I watched of Fulham was sort of the Rachel Yankee days, and because my mum was really into women's football. And it was really good to see. And I think the whole playing at Craven Cottage facility is something that we can definitely use for our own advantage, because I don't think there's many in the league who can sort of boast, you know, coming to Craven Cottage where you've got the impeccable surface and basically just using that home advantage. I know there's probably some costs involved where they can't necessarily host every single game, and there's obviously fixture congestion, but I think it's definitely a resource that they should really utilize. And like you say, they've been very good this year, I think, potentially overachieving. I know the name carries a lot of weight potentially, like obviously Dartford FC looking at Fulham Football Club as a professional men's team in the Premier League, but the ladies team is still, I would say, in like a transition. And I think they've really, really done really well this year. But I was pleasantly impressed, and like the attacking intent from the team was something which I don't know whether there was any kind of influence from Marco Silva and team to in the way that they're playing, but I saw some similarities, which was nice. But like I said, transitional year. They can show they can do it with the best in the top in the division. I think promotion maybe just a bit out of reach for them now, but hey ho, it's going to be, I think, an exciting year if they can build on this year and not, you know, take two steps back or lose certain players if they find that they're sort of going sort of up certain leagues. But I definitely think that if they can keep the team together and build on, then I can't see a reason why they wouldn't be pushing for that top spot. And I think that's quite unfortunate to be in that position where you're in a league where only the top of the division goes up. But hey, you got to be the best to beat the best, I suppose. But hopefully there'll be that team next year.
Well, as you say, I mean, obviously, Fulham Football Club is surely interested in having the women play at the highest possible level. And you're competing for talent, but really at that level, you'd think we'd have a massive advantage given we are a Premier League club. We have the facilities, we have the infrastructure, we have the opportunity for players to play a couple of times a season at that level and just be supported and surrounded by that kind of professional setup, really. I know if I was a pro-am, sort of semi-pro player, that would attract me to a setup for sure. And long may it continue. And it feels like they probably need to really push on and beef that squad up and just take it on to the next level so that if not this season, but next season and the season's beyond absolute certainties to move on and progress up the hierarchy. Let's carry on and let's jump forward and talk about the West Ham game. How can we not mention the news of the week, if not the month, and that is the announcement of Mooney's as player of the month, Premier League player of the month. And I'm not sure how many of you listening watched the Fulham FC TV, the interview where Willian and Andres Pereira presented the award to Mooney's. It was very, very heartwarming, absolutely lovely stuff. And if he needed to do anything to make his fans love him even more, he's just a lovely guy, isn't he? He's just a good sort. And you've got to take your hat off to Marco Silva for, obviously, you know, it's a priority for Marco to hire good eggs, I'd say. You know, I think it's an important thing for him. I just don't see him hiring superstars who are brats. I just don't think he could ever bring himself to do it. Guys, what did you think about that award, and particularly, you know, his achievement alongside some, you know, pretty good peers for the month of March?
Yeah, so it was. It was obviously like last, he was up for the same award last month, wasn't he? And fell short. And it was great, you know, after the performances he put in March, to be in the hat again. But I just didn't really have any confidence that he'd be able to win it above, you know, some of the players that were nominated from bigger clubs and top six. So it was a really welcome surprise to see that, you know, he'd managed to secure the award. And I thought the club did a really great job of, you know, showing, you know, doing the surprise unveiling, which, as you say, was really heartwarming. Lovely to watch. I've watched it four or five times now. It's just, you know, real feel good clip to watch. And I'm really pleased for him. It really meant a lot to him. I think it's great for the club as well, to finally break the hoodoo, because I think it was 2010, I think, the last time we've had a player win Player of the Month, that Mark Schwarzer. So it's been a long, long time. And it's just a real testament to what he's done over the last 2 months. And he's really now starting to make a name for himself, and long may it continue.
Yeah, I was getting ready with the whole system needs to be turned upside down, because it's an absolute disgrace that certain players can't win Player of the Month anymore, because now it's basically just a popularity contest, as Dave says. Basically, if you want a really good FIFA card to fit your team, you all vote for that player. And that's why I was like, you always look out for like Son or Rashford or Salah, those real sort of key players which just tear teams apart on FIFA. And we had Son in this one, and I was like, oh, God's sake, he's going to win it. And I was getting ready to say, oh, this needs to be binned, go back to just allowing a panel to vote. And I was actually surprised. Not to say that he didn't deserve it, thoroughly deserved it, but I was absolutely surprised to see that he got the trophy. And then even that made me feel like emotional, that, you know, you knew it made a great, a lot to him. But then to see the video with Andreas and Willian, I was like a grown man crying at my desk, just because I was just looking at watching the video. And it was so relatable, as in, like, you know, he sort of got a bit teary when he scored his first Premier League goal. And it's sort of like these little milestones that he's hitting, and they're clearly hitting home. And he's so grounded and he's so humble. And it's almost just the most lovable and the sweetest thing to see this guy grow, which I would love him just to keep going. Like, I don't care if he doesn't sort of score another goal or play another game for us. I just want him to be around the club. I just love him that much now. He's just that sort of player, which, like you say, he's not bratty. He's not sort of, there's a lot of players who I imagine would get that trophy and be like, yeah, cheers, thank you, and then just walk off. But the fact that he was just like in awe of this trophy, that he is the best player in the Premier League for March, and there are people in the Premier League who haven't won this, such as like Kevin De Bruyne being one of them. So he's got something that Kevin De Bruyne doesn't have. He may have all of his Champions League trophies and medals, doesn't have a Player of the Month in the Premier League. As of yet, anyway, when this is recorded. So, you know, he's got one up on KDB. What a fantastic thing. And for a Fulham player to do it in the world that we talked about of this popularity contest, so proud to be a Fulham fan, so proud to see this. And yeah, hope he gets more. I mean, it's amazing.
I couldn't agree more. It's very difficult to imagine this guy. Let's say he pushes on. It's very difficult to imagine him becoming a brat. I can't see it. I just cannot see it. I think he's a good sort, you know, and I think he probably he might not shed a tear every time he scores a goal, but I just can't imagine he's going to be the sort of guy who's going to forget where he came from and forget the opportunity he's been given and how he's been backed through a pretty lean start. Anyway, absolutely tremendous value and something that I just think the timing of this is good. We've had a difficult few months around the topic of striker at Fulham Football Club, you know, starting with Mitro leaving the club in the manner that he did. And not just the manner that he did, the hole that he left us in and the deficit that he left us in as he walked away. The guy was very successful for us, and he was a feared striker in the Premier League. And then we're just flapping around for weeks and months, and we get mini starts from Raul and, you know, little cameos from Vinny and things like that. And then this guy comes along, and you could never, ever have written it. And it's just the best outcome.
This is a quick question, actually.
Yeah, go on.
If you were asked or you were told in August that Fulham would get a player of the month this year, how low on your list of players would Rodrigo Muniz have been?
Oh, I wouldn't have even been a thought.
I think it would be more chance of like Luke Harris getting it than Muniz, because he was just so out of favour, so lowly rated, even by Fulham fans. We didn't think he had this in him. That it's just phenomenal. I would have been sectioned if I said anything about Muniz winning the Player of the Month in March.
Yeah.
The only disappointing thing for me about the whole thing is the state of that trophy. I mean, it's pretty pathetic. It looks like they've just coloured in a Pringles box, isn't it? I'd be really disappointed about that.
It looks like a gender reveal cone. Or maybe an Amazon, what is it called? The Amazon.
Like a confetti cannon.
Or an Amazon Echo. Not an Echo. What's it called? Amazon.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, Alexa. Yeah.
Alexa, the thing. It looks like Alexa wrapped in Man City colours.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's probably appropriate that we also talk about another award within the club, which Skibby brought to our attention. I think he picked that up pretty early on the news cycle. And that was, let me get his name right. I hope he's listening, because he can pick me out on the pronunciation. But I think it's Payazitsi. Is that right?
Payazitsi.
Payazitsi.
Let's go with that.
Yeah, Payazitsi. I'm paying that. Under 21's up and coming star. Pretty good stats really for the month. Three appearances, 5 goals, and 5 assists. That's that's pretty good stats. I really can't say too much about the guy. Don't know him at all. But I thought it was worthy of a mention that he's obviously doing special things down there, and he's been recognised, which is tremendous. So, good week for Fulham Football Club.
Yeah.
So let's switch back now to the thing that's going to dominate our weekend, and as we said before, the thing that can't possibly ruin our Saturday, and that is the fixture against West Ham. It's got everything to play for Sunday's hearts and minds and feelings. But before we talk about the fixture tomorrow, which I should probably give you the details on, if I could only... I've made this so small now, I can't even bloody see it, but let me try and get back to it. Oh, there we go. Clearly in need of a director here, aren't I? Let me try that. So the game tomorrow is a Sunday fixture, obviously, and that is at 9 p.m. Western time in Australia and 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, obviously, at the London Stadium at 2 p.m. kickoff. I'm not sure if either of you two are going, but I think I heard you weren't.
I am.
You are going. Well done. And in the US, we've got a 6 a.m. Pacific kickoff. It's a nice fruity time. And a 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time kickoff for tomorrow. Guys, I'm not sure how much notice you took or how much time you've had to have a look at what happened on Thursday with West Ham v Leverkusen. I picked up the highlights, in fact, the extended highlights. I thought West Ham looked fairly predictable as West Ham, but I thought they looked pretty ordinary. Is that harsh to say that?
I would say the story actually, of their season, but
you know, I tell you what my first impression was. If that is Europe, I feel quite confident about Fulham being competitive in Europe, even in the current squad. You know, I know there's 9 points in the Premier League between these two sides at the moment. So, you know, we've got to recognise that because they're doing a job. But it didn't look an amazing standard game to me. I know I saw that through a lens of 5 minutes of highlights, which is probably not enough to really draw a decent conclusion. But Skibby, what are your impressions of that outing, and how do you think that sets West Ham up for this fixture against us tomorrow?
Yeah, so it's hard to gauge on the first leg, I think, because I think a lot of teams go in not wanting to lose and not wanting the second leg to be out of sight. So I think it was a cagey affair. You had kind of West Ham setting up exactly how they would set up, which is to contain and hit on the counter-attack using Mikel Antonio's just physicality all round. I mean, they were hit with the news that Jared Bowen is out because of a bruised spine or a bruising to his spine. I'm not sure how long he's going to be out for, whether he'll be back for the second leg. Not sure, but that is a very big impact for them. He scored, I think, 15 goals this year in the Premier League. No idea about all competitions, but you know what? 15 in the Premier League is a ridiculous amount for a team that's mid-table. So he is a huge loss for them. But I think the real key thing that I see from how West Ham play is Mikel Antonio being that outball, bullying and just using his pace to get beyond defenders and just really making an absolute nuisance of himself. But the fact that they don't have a backup striker. And I think that's something which a lot of my friends who are West Ham fans have been crying out for years. And they had Skamaka, they had Haller come in, and they just weren't the Moyes type of attackers that they wanted, which Antonio just does all this defending for a striker, which is really impressive. But can he do it for 90 minutes against Leverkusen in Germany, which he did? Then he's now going to have to come back, do potentially 90 minutes against Fulham, unless they find a striker from the youth setup. Then he's got to do another 90 minutes at home to Leverkusen. That is a lot of minutes for someone who does such an intense work rate that he does, that I think that's going to benefit Fulham in a way that he may not either be used as effectively against Fulham to try and save him for the home leg against Leverkusen, because they're 2-0 down, so they need to go for it. There's no containing or sitting back like Moyes likes to do. But that really does work in our favour that we are playing West Ham at probably the best point. Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, just a quick question on that. I just wondered if you thought they might bring Ings in for the Fulham game.
They could, but I don't think he offers the same level of intensity, and he's just not a Moyes player. I think Ings, for me, potentially could come in, but you just lose all of that intensity in key way to Moyes' football that he almost doesn't really like to play that way. I think, was it Burnley, when they were sort of 2-0 down, he came off the bench and sort of grabbed a couple of goals, or grabbed one of the goals at least. But he doesn't offer that rough and tumble, high defending and high press that Antonio does, that it just doesn't give them an out ball, and therefore they're containing to hold people off and then just doesn't go anywhere. So you could see that. But I think it's going to be an interesting, and it's probably the best time to play West Ham, as I mentioned. It's just, you're never going to get a better opportunity, because with a West Ham, who are fully rested with Paqueta, Kudus is looking very solid. And with Antonio, as I mentioned, Bassi and Tosin will know they're in a game. They're very, I'm not going to call them naive, but they're younger and don't particularly don't have the footballing brain that to match Antonio's physicality and what he does best. But I guess what does work on our side there is the pace in behind that they can potentially sort of catch him or but they're never going to win that kind of physical battle. But yeah, I think that's where I could see it happening. Like I said, best time to play them. But I'm not sure on the rotation from a West Ham perspective because they just don't have anyone to rotate.
Yeah.
I mean, my sense with West Ham, you know, as I said earlier, they're doing well. They're grinding out a pretty good result this season in a general sense. You know, they're sitting eighth or ninth at the moment. They're 9 points ahead of Fulham. Played the same number of games, I think. But they feel skinny. They feel quite vulnerable to a couple of injuries to key players. And then they suddenly look quite a different outfit. You know, and as much as they must be delighted to be playing in Europe, it's good for the fans, it's good for the club, it's good for revenue, it's good for the brand. It must be such hard work, just emotionally for them, physically. And I don't know if you picked up the Moyes press conference just before we came to air, but, you know, he was very composed and calm, as he always is. But it was a press conference about tomorrow's game. Well, it was certainly a little bit of a wrap of their Thursday night game and a discussion of the game against Fulham. But it's impossible for that second leg to be out of his mind. And as much as they're a professional outfit and they've got to prepare for tomorrow, and they will, and once they're in it, they'll be fine. It's a huge game for them next week when they host Leverkusen, who are a much better side than them, and they've got to be on their best. And he'll, you know, if they picked up any injuries tomorrow, that's curtains for Thursday for them.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely toast. So it's a nasty little period of 7 days for them. I shared a little video, a tactical video with you guys yesterday. I'm not sure if you had a chance to have a look at it, Dave.
Unfortunately not. I was driving back yesterday from holiday, so I haven't had the chance to catch that yet. But I think Skip
quite all right. Yeah, it's actually an interesting little piece.
It is, unfortunately.
It was actually quite well explained. I mean, you know, full disclosure, I don't love watching Moyes ball. You know, it's not entertaining football. Highly effective, and the results are on the Premier League table for everyone to see. And maybe there are many people in our stands who'd be delighted if we could pick up those points and be that effective of grinding out. It's kind of like test cricket and, you know, grinding out five-day wins when you save it all for the last two sessions and suddenly roll the team over, which you know, that's part of what you're doing. But I like our brand of football. But all of that said, this is potentially another situation where we're going to be faced with a low block, maybe a mid block. But one of the things that analysis was focusing on is how tight they keep the play. I think I mentioned, you know, they like to sort of keep the band across about 30 yards, really, really tight. And we've proven that we're just not that great in breaking that down. We don't have the tricky players to break that down. So, yeah, this is yet another test on the road for Fulham, who don't always play that well when teams are happy for us to have the ball. And West Ham are very happy for opposition sides to have the ball.
Yeah, Yeah, you're right. And, you know, almost they're the worst team to play for Fulham, really, in that sense that they will, you know, adopt a similar strategy, which will be, you know, get people organised, be very organised, you know, use the low block and then look to counter on us. And as you say, we just lack the kind of ability currently to be able to break that down. We prefer when teams press us from the, you know, from the back, and then we can break round them and attack quickly to create chances. And that's just the only way we're going to be able to you know, make that opportunity happen, is if by we manage to score first in this game and find a way of scoring first. And I think that is just so key with this game. If we can find a way, whether it's a set piece or, you know, an error by, you know, at the back by West Ham, possibly due to fatigue of midweek and focusing ahead to the game on Thursday, find a way to get in front in this game, then I think we've got a really big opportunity, and West Ham may just ride it off knowing that there's a bigger games to come. But, you know, obviously the, you know, the team have given us a lot of confidence recently away from home that we're able to kind of do that. So, you know, it's one of those games where I think the longer it stays 0-0, the better it is for West Ham. More chance that they'll, you know, we'll find a way of making a mistake and giving them an opportunity, or, you know, they'll get a set piece or a something like that can go their way. So, as always with Fulham, first goals will be really important, but no more so than tomorrow. I think it's huge. And we've just got to find a way, really, of making sure that we can get our noses in front. I do think, you know, there's a few things with West Ham. I do think they will be distracted. And I think they, you know, 2-0 is not the end of the world. If they score first at home, they're back in the game. I think another interesting result at the on Thursday was Liverpool losing 3-0. Because if they go out of that competition, West Ham have got to be one of the favourites to actually win it. You know, Liverpool were by far the best team left. And what an opportunity, you know, if they can find a way back into the, not Leverkusen out, who are probably one of the other favourites for the tournament, they're going to be right in this. So that's clearly going to be the priority. I don't think they'll risk the injured players. I think Bowen's definitely out. But I think the Greek defender, I think he's probably arguably one of their best centre backs, and, you know, certainly in their first 11. I think that's obviously a plus. The bad news is I think Emerson and Panketta are both suspended for next Thursday, so, you know, they'll be able to play a full 90 minutes and not have to worry about fatigue and injury. So, yeah, it's but other than that, they haven't got a lot they can really rotate, as Skibby says. So, you know, they'll definitely look to sit back and find a way to grab a goal, to defend. It's definitely the way to play against Fulham. So, yeah, it's a game I'm kind of, Skibby's right, it's a huge opportunity, but I just, the team haven't given me enough confidence to show me that they can do
absolutely
the,
not
do the business. So it is a worry.
I think the other eye-opening thing was that, you know, for me, was showing how big of a squad, a good of a squad you need to compete in Europe. So, I mean, yeah, we were all sort of, mainly me, I was getting really excited about the possibility of Europe last year and this year, which is now sort of fading. But the fact that we took off, you know, Kearney, Willian and Pereira in the last game and completely fell off and lost control of the game, just shows we don't have the squad depth to compete in Europe. So now it's kind of been a blessing in disguise for me watching West Ham and Leverkusen, just to sort of, you know, they brought on, I think Leverkusen brought on, I'm probably going to butcher his name, but Boniface, who is a fantastic striker to bring off the bench. And I was thinking, who would we bring on? We'd bring on Raul Jimenez and, you know, and no one near that kind of quality. And you think, okay, maybe give it a bit more of a transition to sort of start pushing for Europe and hope we would get backed. But that was one of the other sort of takeaways I took from more of a selfish perspective, from a Fulham perspective.
A
couple of things on picking up on what you said, Dave. You mentioned that the longer it stays goalless, the worse it is for us. I would argue that a disaster would be an early goal against us. If we go down early, I mean, that would just allow invite West Ham to be even more defensive. They simply wouldn't have to take any risks whatsoever, which would probably be, you know, a delight for them. So the other part about it is that, you know, the way in which they play, their whole counter-attacking style, Jared Bowen, I don't think we're overstating it or being too optimistic, but Jared Bowen, his piece in that as an outlet is hugely important. So one wonders who they will and can bring in for him and you know, whether that player truly matches the effectiveness as an outlet down that channel. Mm. I think the Greek players, can't remember his name now.
I think he's got
Mavropanos, yeah. That's it. Yeah, I think he's got a hamstring injury, but they're a little bit cagey about the seriousness of that. Obviously, Areola is still out, but Fabianski actually made a couple of pretty good saves on Thursday night. So, I mean, he's hardly rubbish. Anything else that you guys sort of spot as potential opportunities for us? I mean, it's not lost on me that we've had a number of these situations where we think this is a great time to play X.
Yeah.
We've had a number of these. Like, what about Newcastle? You know, we did the business with Man United.
I mean, Sheffield United completely fallen off the... I mean, there's plenty to talk about. I mean, I was looking at West Ham's sort of previous Premier League game and who they would bring off the bench and who they would, you know, to sort of game changers, as it were. And it just doesn't seem to be anyone who strikes fear into you. I mean, it's going to sound really cocky, but they just don't. I mean, they bring on... I think they brought on Aaron Cresswell when Bowen was injured. They brought on Ben Johnson, who I don't know where his best position is. He comes at right back, centre defensive mid, but again, he's not one who's going to come on and hurt you. Danny Ings, he knows where the goal is, but he doesn't sort of strike me as that kind of player who is just going to be driving at you the full 90 minutes. Kudus, I know he starts. He's probably the closest replacement they've got to Bowen. I think he's a fantastic player. He reminds me of Steve Malbronk. He just loves to get the ball. As soon as he gets the ball, he gets his head down and he drives. And I just love that about him. I think that's a fantastic asset to have. But he can't do it all on his own. Granted, he has done it all on his own in a couple of occasions where he just run from his own area, like his own half, and just smashed it into the goal. But I think he is going to be one of those sort of key players, with obviously him and Paqueta, but it's just whether they have that cutting edge ahead of them to actually make something happen. So I can see Kudos and Paqueta potentially being that kind of out ball. So for their counter when they're trying to contain. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just where we have potentially Adama Traore to come off the bench and someone just being able to say they can actually take the game by the scruff of the neck and actually put some fear into the opposition. That's probably where we have an advantage, but it's all coming down to fragile Fulham, which we talked about before, which is, do they have the mentality to think we're 0-0 at half time against a team who's just come back from Germany after a really long 90 minutes? They're missing countless stars and their heads just seem to sort of, they just run out of ideas. And I think that's just all we can just have to try and avoid, is just losing our heads and losing our composure and just trying to get a goal within the first half. Otherwise the second half is just always painful in that situation.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I think 0-0, the longer the game goes on, is potentially a worry for us, is because I'm starting to think that Marco's struggling a bit with having a fully fit squad and all these options. The last couple of games we've seen, obviously the Nottingham Forest game where it kind of worked, making all the free subs in the first half just to get us back on track. But it really fell apart in the Newcastle game when he tried to influence the game by making the free subs and taking off Kearney, Pereira and Iwobi, I think it was. And, we lost all of our rhythm and, almost having a full squad is, and all those choices and ability to impact the game is, you've got to get it right. And you know, that's my worry, is whether he'll, Marco will panic, want to change something if we're not ahead, and actually just a bit like the Newcastle game, we'll end up losing our shape and blowing this one. And, you know, so I do think a goal in the first half is got to be, that's the way we get something out of this game. But yeah, it's as Skippy says, they don't have as much on the bench to change the game, but they've certainly got weapons in their arsenal. Paqueta's a fantastic player. Kudus, as you mentioned, is a fantastic player. You know, these are dangerous players that on their day can score against anyone. And, you know, their midfield will be tight and compact with probably Ward-Prowse, Alvarez and Suchek, you know, three kind of tough, experienced players that will be hard to break down and be a match for our midfield, make no doubt about that. So, yeah, it's a tough game for sure.
Well, let's move away from the psychological and emotional, which we are always forced to focus on with Fulham, to try and understand what the hell happened and what might happen. And let's look at the data like we can. I'm always sort of amused when we switch to you know, analysing form, because Fulham are clearly the most unpredictable side at the moment. You know, our form is almost no analogue for what might happen, next. Let's look at West Ham's recent form over the last five games. Obviously, Leverkusen last week in the Europa League beaten away 2-0. Prior to that, a win to Wolves. Away 2-1, at home to Tottenham, a draw, which turns out isn't that big a feat. We did that pretty easily, didn't we? That doesn't mean anything to us.
Draw would count as a loss. they're not that good.
Absolutely. And then a loss to Newcastle.
And they were 3-1 up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And to lose 4-3 when you're 3-1 up, that's terrible. And then a draw to Aston Villa. I don't regard that as a bad result. They're not a bad side. But, that's a bit of a hodgepodge of fixtures. I don't know what you can really make of that. A form comparison here says that over the last, last 10 games, Fulham are actually sitting in 10th place on form, as opposed to West Ham on 12th, which amazes me, because it can only tell a story of West Ham having had a very, very good season prior to Christmas, because our form recently has been pretty terrible, apart from a couple of standouts. But, 14 points gathered by Fulham over the last 10 games, as opposed to West Ham's 12th. I look at all this data and I'm thinking, I want to believe in it, and I want to look at this as being a pointer to what's going to happen next. But really, honestly, I just don't know. Am I being unreasonable about that?
No, I think there's another opportunity within these two slides that you've shown, and that's West Ham are conceding goals. There's 23 in the last 10 games, you know, so. And that game at Newcastle, very unlike them to be away at home winning and, you know, throw it away. So perhaps maybe we're giving them a little bit too much credit, and there's a real opportunity to get out of their back line, particularly with Mavropanos out. So, maybe there's something in that that we should focus on.
Yeah. And I think, like you say, I think when I watch them, Zouma and Aguerd are quite hit and miss. I guess I would probably compare Zouma to Tosin. He's very much, he can be absolutely on his game and everybody loves him, or he's just making really stupid mistakes, looking really casual. And it's very much a Marmite player for the West Ham fans. According to my friends anyway. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? Stats are screaming for a Fulham win, and everything is in Fulham's favour. And yet I'm still not optimistic, which is just, it's just us as a fan base, I suppose. But I think I'll touch upon Alvarez. I think Alvarez is a fantastic player. He was one of the players that was missing when we beat them 5-0, and it showed they just didn't have that hold in the midfield. And he, but without sort of Paqueta in the second leg, are they going to be sort of nursing Alvarez and potentially trying to slot somebody else in? I don't know if Ben Johnson will sit in. I don't know. They don't really have another centre mid that they can just plonk in place of Alvarez. But I guess that becomes a question on Fulham now. Who do we put in the centre mid? Because the centre mid for me is something that isn't fixed. So we've got, you know, we know Willian, we know Muniz is going to start, and we pretty much know our back line. But our centre mids just seem to sort of chop and change. And I guess a question to you guys is, in a West Ham team who love their opposition to have the ball, who do you think is going to be that partner to Polina for this game?
I would be brave and play Kearney and you know, try and, if we know we're going to have the ball, then get someone in who's, you know, going to be the most effective with it. And I think that's Tom Kearney. Although it wouldn't surprise me if Lukic comes back into the side. I think he's ahead of Reed at the moment. Just in recent games, he's featured more. So, but you're absolutely right. That is a kind of an unknown. We don't know who's going to put in there. I mean, he might even throw a wild card and stick Iwobi in there for this one, you know, to, you know, make, create a wide space for someone like Traore, who hasn't started a game yet. So it's really hard to tell at the moment where he's going to go. But if you're asking me personally, I think it would be Tom Kearney to partner Zhao. As you say, I don't expect too many changes other than that. Our goalkeeper and our defence are pretty set in stone. Willian, I think, will certainly start. And Mooney's up front. So it's just that right-hand side, potentially, and centre mid, where there could be a switch.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Dave. I mean, top four, top six sides have enjoyed as much as 70% possession against West Ham. I'm not sure how that stat changes as you move down the table, and whether they compete a bit more and, you know, are happy to take the ball. But if we're afforded even something near that, I'd want Tom Kearney in the middle every single time. I think it would be he's a reliable player for that style of game. You know, it's not in question as to whether he could do it. I've seen some really, really good things with Sasa Lukic. I feel you kind of know what you're going to get with Tom Kearney. You know the kind of situations that you want to play him in to exploit what he's good at. I do feel a bit sorry for Sasa Lukic in that I think he's often required to play a few different roles still. And so it's probably an unfair comparison to line him up against and alongside of Tom Kearney and say, you know, who's kind of performing better. Because TC, he's, I don't want to say he's one-dimensional at all, but we know what he can do. And if the opportunity presents, he'll do a really great job. If you're asking for him to sit deep and do a ton of defending, I'm kind of a bit bothered. If you're asking him to box to box all day long, I'm also a bit bothered, because that's probably, you know, you might be better off with even Harrison Reed if that's the job to be done. And Lukic looks like he can play that role as well. So again, you know, as punters here, we think we understand what the job at hand is, but I'm sure Marco will have analysed this to pieces. And hell of a plan. And as much as we always love to say trust Marco, back to your comment, you know, that substitution, when he took those three players off, it wasn't only an expose of just how little we had on the bench, but was it the first moment this last two seasons that we've seen Silver panic? Was it a moment where he thought, shit, this has really got beyond us, I've got to do something here? And he actually, I think it's a pretty widely held sense and feeling that he absolutely cooked it, you know. Was that a moment of panic?
I think obviously Newcastle had changed their style in the game and we were finding it tougher to break them down. And I think he tried to change our tactics by bringing on three very different kind of players. And it just backfired. It didn't work at all. It just, our whole shape fell apart. And, you know, that's what I was saying before. I worry that almost he's got too many options. He can tinker too much from the bench at the moment. And that, you know, creates its own problems. And, you know, something that we haven't had the pleasure of all season because we've had various injuries throughout. Now we don't. And you think that would be a massive benefit, but we're seeing actually how it can go against you if you don't get it right. And that would be a little bit of a worry of mine tomorrow. And, you know, that's why we're still talking about the starting 11 because, you know, we're coming off a loss again. So we know that there's potential for changes. And I do hear the argument for Luke as well. If he's nervous about the counter-attack, you're right about Tom Kearney. He's not, you know, he's not particularly well suited to that. It will leave Jao quite exposed, really, if West Ham continue to counter on us. So I understand the argument for putting Lukic in that scenario as well. So, yeah, I really want to see Marco get a grip of the squad and how he's going to approach and change games, because I think that's going to be quite important for the rest of the season.
I mean, back to your original point, I don't think it was a panic from Marco. I mean, from my memory anyway, we were still in the game in Newcastle. We weren't really losing touch or losing any kind of ground. It just almost seemed like a naive move that he just thought that we were so comfortable, potentially, that he could make said changes and rest certain players. I think that's where it was more coming from Marco, that, you know, to take off Kearney and Willian and assume that, you know, Wilson and Lukic will be exactly the same. I don't see it personally. But hey, I think maybe he's learned from that, you know, we don't certainly carry the same characteristics, especially with Lukic. I don't think he's the sort of the right number eight that fits the bill when we're sort of, you know, when a team is sitting in and we want to contain keep the ball and sort of push for with a lot of attacking intent. I just don't think Lukic is that player. I know he scored against Spurs, but I just don't see anything else from him. I mean, Dave actually touched on a perfect thing. I think originally I was saying Kearney starts for me. And that I was speaking to Cottage Tactico offline and just sort of, and he agreed. So there you go. You could take that accolade with you that you agree with Cottage Tactico, but it won't be. For me, in a number eight would be very interesting because I think he carries the ball so well. He's such a strong player, not necessarily the quickest, so he's probably not the best out wide. But do you give Wilson another chance out wide with Iwobi in there? I think that would be a very, very attacking move. I think it would be because I think defensively, because he's so physical, he would still be able to complement Zhao. But I think that's probably wishful thinking. But yeah, it's interesting, but I can't see anyone else but Kearney start this game. Loves the ball at his feet, loves to sort of attack with or have the possession. And I think that's just the way we're going to go.
Yeah.
One player we haven't talked about is James Ward-Prowse. Are we anxious about his capacity to hurt us at all
Set-piece
tomorrow?
Set-piece merchant, no. He's just scores. Yeah. He scored direct from a corner against Wolves. I think that's more on Wolves than him, if I'm honest. Nobody should be scoring from there in a professional game, in my opinion. But no matter who you are, but I think he is a luxury player. He is our kind of Andreas Pereira, as it were, that he puts a good ball in from a free kick from a corner, but out in open play, he doesn't really offer much else. I mean, here we go. I'm setting us up to concede to Aaron Cresswell and James Ward-Prowse from a header or something stupid. But I just don't think you're right. as a threat in open play. Probably the same frustrations they see that we see in Pereira from an option that, yes, he's just good to have on the on the pitch for if something drops in that area that he can cause a problem. But I mean, I'm going to be harsh here, Andreas. But
I think my question was actually more around the fact that I find us sometimes a bit sloppy in defensive midfield. We give away unnecessary free kicks, and almost kind of naively surprised when we find ourselves suddenly defending something in quite a dangerous position. Well, you cannot do that for Ward-Prowse. He's a bit of a Beckham to me. You know, amazing dead ball player, like super gifted, but not really that scary outside of that. But we do seem to be a little bit, I don't know, just a bit naive, really, in terms of giving the ball, giving away cheap free kicks. And I don't think Zhao's the only person who's guilty of that. Harrison Reed can often be really guilty of that. And also a spiteful Sasa Lukic when he's been gingered. But anyway, the other one I wanted to talk about is Tosin. Now, there's been renewed conversations in the media about him with Spurs, apparently, you know, very interested in him. One of the Manchester clubs I also heard noises about. And of course, West Ham's been touted as being interested in Tosin. Is there anything? I mean, it seems strange to me that if Tosin is walking at the end of the season, which it seems he is, because if he isn't, how come he hasn't signed a contract? So one assumes he's going to walk, right? It seems strange to me that Marco persists with him, because I would have thought Marco's the kind of manager that if you don't want to play for this club, I'm going to give someone else an opportunity, because I want to give it the opportunity to someone who wants to be part of this unit. That's the kind of manager that he appears to be in my head. And yet he's persisting with Tosin over Diop. Do you see anything changing in the selection of Tosin in the subsequent games as we run out towards the end of the season? Is there at any point going to come where, you know, we're not really fighting for eighth, we're not going to end up 16th, and does Marco keep playing Tosin?
So I think for now, yes, I think there's no indication that he's going to take Tosin out and put Diop in the squad. I totally understand the logic behind what you're suggesting, that, you know, there's one guy that's signed on long-term there, and then there's another that's, you know, looks like he's leaving at the end of the year. Why not, with so little left to play for, bring in the guy that's more likely to be here longer term? That's a perfectly reasonable argument. But I suspect perhaps Marco hasn't given up on the club securing a contract for Tosin, and sees him as an important player in the system. It's got to be one of those two reasons. But whatever it is, I just can't see him taking him out. You know, I'm not saying he had a fantastic game against Newcastle, but I didn't particularly think he was at fault for the goal, or, you know, did anything obviously wrong in the game that would suggest that he should be dropped from the starting 11. So whereas I totally understand the logic, there's just been no indication from Marco that he's got any intention of leaving him out. So I think I would be surprised, unless there's injury or suspension, if the defence changes much at all for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think the only other thing I could add to that is potentially there's some tricky finance at play with financial fair play. Like if you run down his contract and then he signs it in June, then does that mean that the new money then starts rolling over into the next financial year? Because I think they do June to June. So there could be something weird like that. That's just me being tinfoil hat on, maybe, but they're getting a little bit more tricky with their finding the loopholes in terms of freeing up cash. because I think it's going to be, if the reports are true, then the Tosin contract is going to put him as one of the highest earners, which is going to show as quite a big impact into sort of financial fair play going forward. But it's one of those things. Only Marco and Tosin and the club know what's going on. So I don't think Marco's got sort of the gall to play someone who doesn't want to be there and leaving at the end of the season. So maybe there's something where he's actually showing an intent and we are going to be signing him on an extension after the season's finished. Not too sure. But if we play him to the end of the season and then he leaves to Spurs, where he's going to be fourth choice anyway, fair enough. But I don't know. It's up to him at the end of the day, isn't it? But unless there's something weird gone on with Diop as well, because Diop's not even making the squad. I know Ream is probably one of the sort of the vice captain type of the squad, but to not make the bench after signing for us for between 15 and 18 million just seems a bit strange. And we're going to play someone instead who's leaving the club. Potentially Diop's had a tantrum and upset Marco, and now Marco's kind of hands are tied and he's has to play the player. You know, he's got one want away who's being really dramatic, and you've got one want away who's not signing a contract but he's being professional about it. Then you're just sort of playing the guy, you know, who's not a massive pain in the ass at the end of the day. But I mean, there's so many theories I could come up with, and I'm sure I can come up with some more if anybody wants them.
but it's true, because but you know Dave's theory that we're trying to sweeten Tosin because we'd like to keep him, we think there's still an opportunity, to your idea that perhaps Diop's fallen foul and now Marco's got no choice. And I think, in fairness, if you look at the last 10, 15 games, there'd been a couple of ordinary outings, but Tosin's been pretty good. Yeah. He's actually been pretty good. And in a couple of games, outstanding. So I don't think there's any kind of any concern about whether his position on paper is kind of justified. It's all the other things floating around in the background. And who will ever know? Who will ever know?
No, I think there's starting to become a little bit of frustration in the fan base as well around that whole situation. So, you know, a bit of frustration as to why he hasn't signed a contract, you know, why he doesn't want to stay with the club. And fans are emotional, aren't we? You know, we want to commit to the club and be part of the future. So I totally understand, you know, that frustration, and I share it. But I think, you know, Marco's perhaps not looking at it like the fans are. I think he might be looking at it more from a tactical point of view and, you know, thinks that perhaps Tosin's ahead of Diop and wants to play his strongest team. You know, it might be as simple as that.
Hard to argue with that, really. Very difficult to argue with that. When his job is to make points and, you know, progress the club, it's kind of got to be front and center. Okay. I've got some bad news for you guys. I think your DIY lists, you know, are probably going to be unavoidable today. And a few people are going to be let out of solitary confinement very soon. I think let's talk about some scoreline predictions for tomorrow. Skibby, how are you feeling? What are you thinking?
Oh, my head's saying that we're going to get back on track and it's going to be a 4-0 win. Just part of me is just feeling that. I think something's going to click. We've had too many crap games where I think it's just going to fall back into place, and a week in West Ham team, I think it's just going to be a miraculous, unpredicted 4-0 win. But I can also see us losing, so it's a bit strange. But I'm going to stick with 4-0.
Wow. Dave, yeah, follow bold. That. Beat that.
Yeah, that's bold. Love it. I love it, by the way, but it's bold. My heart says we can win 2-0. My head says we could lose 2-0. So I'm really stuck between those that, you know. I think it's a tough game for us. And just that our away form at the moment has been so poor that I can't just give you a score to, that I don't think is actually achievable. I think we might struggle. I think we might find this a difficult game, and perhaps it might be one we have to put behind us quickly and bounce back for. So tend to favour my head judgment than my heart, and think we might find it a tough day.
Am I detecting that you're having trouble actually saying the words?
I am, very much. I don't like to predict for them to lose, you know, but and I don't want to demotivate the fan base, you know, but you know, we all know that you've got to be realistic, and away form has been really poor. And it's not just me not having confidence in the team away from home. I don't think they're confident about getting away results, and that's more concerning. So yeah, until they show me that they, you know, can find a way to win games away from home, you know, I'm finding it really difficult to you know, genuinely predict positive results.
Can't argue with that. I'd love to pull that apart and analyze it, but I can't argue with it. I feel like this is very winnable. I really do, for all the reasons we've been talking about. Not that I think they're a terrible side in any way, shape, or form, but I feel like we that there has to be one of these opportunities where we play a side on the back foot that actually comes off. It has to be, and they're certainly not unbeatable. If we were playing them at home, I'd probably be pretty confident. Mm. But I think they've got a goal in them. And I think we're going to score two. So I'm going to go 2-1 to Fulham, which, you know, again, is very punchy because there's nothing in the data that suggests that I should be placing a bet on that for an away game. But what the hell? I'm going to go for it. Like you said, Dave, we're fans. We're emotional. We don't have to be real. Dave can't even say it.
Yeah. No, it hurts too much. It hurts too much.
Yeah. Guys, anything else that we've missed or that you want to cover, you think that's maybe significant before we start preparing for tomorrow? Anything at all?
No, nothing from me. I mean, I'm at the game, so if anyone wants to say hi or give feedback on stuff, come say hi. That's all I want to say.
Absolutely. And on that vein, of course, you know, we'd be very grateful, obviously, if you did continue to like, follow, and subscribe to the podcast, to the YouTube channel, to our X account, to everywhere, really. Follow Dave, follow the Putney Perspective, that's Skibby's account. Follow everything, you know, just be part of it all. All right, guys, well, thanks very much. I'm going to release you to your Saturday afternoon that you can now make more productive than all of this, because you might actually get something conclusive done and you might be able to actually be very firm about it. So, thanks, guys. Thanks, Skibby, for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. And hopefully you guys are wrong and I'm right and we're all laughing. That's all I want.
And Dave, thank you very much as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and wishing Skibby the best afternoon ever tomorrow.
Yeah, and shout out to Jack, who's recovering from a procedure this week, and to Sam, who is, I'm not sure where really, told me he was out at a 30th birthday this afternoon, but who knows, it's no longer the afternoon, he still hasn't appeared, so who knows. But anyway, thanks everyone for listening. I hope we've filled a little corner of your world this afternoon, and in the absence of a game at Craven Cottage or anywhere else. But until next time, it's come on, you Whites.